Imagine for a second that you walk into a store, and you find this bespoke, perfectly tailored designer suit, but it's priced like a thrift store hand-me-down.
Right. Your first thought probably wouldn't be, oh, what an incredible deal.
Exactly. Your first thought would be, wait, what's wrong with it? And today we are asking that exact question about the third largest economy in America.
Yeah, and it's a question that completely defies those binary boom or bust categories we usually rely on, right? Like when we look at urban economics, we love a simple story.
We really do. We want to say the Sun Belt is soaring and the traditional northern hubs are struggling, but reality is rarely that clean.
No, it's really not.
So, welcome to today's deep dive. We have a genuinely fascinating document on the table to explore with you. It's this dense, highly detailed Chicago Comprehensive Urban Analysis, and it's dated August 18th, 2026.
And our mission for you today is not to, debate the merits of deep dish pizza or talk about the wind.
Right, no tourist stuff today. We're going to dissect Chicago's asymmetric value proposition. We want to figure out why it offers this true global city scale at a fraction of the cost of its coastal peers, and most importantly, exactly what the catch is.
And that is the fundamental premise we really need to establish right out of the gate.
Yeah.
Chicago is the ultimate Midwest command center.
The command center.
Yeah. If you look at the macro level, it's a city that exists specifically to connect global capital markets with the American interior.
Yeah.
Like, it isn't the political capital like Washington or the tech capital like San Francisco.
Right.
Its inherent power comes from acting as the physical and financial bridge between those distinct systems.
Okay, let's unpack this because the first thing that jumps out from this 2026 analysis completely upends the national narrative. Wait, hold on. If you read social media, the entire narrative is that the city is hemorrhaging residents.
Oh, absolutely. That's all you hear.
But the demographic data in this report shows Chicago's population has remained remarkably stable. As of the 2025 estimate, it sits at 2.73 million residents. So, where is the disconnect between the data and the narrative?
Well, the disconnect happens because people conflate neighborhood-level shifts with macro-level decline. I mean, is experiencing internal migration. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You have specific neighborhoods losing population while others are rapidly gaining high-income households. But the overall footprint of the city is holding incredibly steady.
Yeah.
And that stability is, well, it's anchored by its sheer undeniable scale.
Right. And to understand that sprawling economic engine, you first have to look at the literal foundation it was built on, because the geography here was not an accident.
No, no.
The report spends a lot of time on the historical portage between the Great Lakes watershed and the Mississippi River system.
Right, and the mechanics of that are crucial. In 1848, the Illinois and Michigan Canal opened, physically linking those two vast waterways.
Which is huge.
Yeah. Long before airplanes or, modern digital finance, that specific geographic choke point made Chicago an unusually powerful transportation node. It allowed goods to flow from the Atlantic through the lakes all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico.
It essentially became the switchyard for the whole continent.
Exactly.
But the infrastructure didn't stop at the waterways. The report brings up the Great Fire of 1871, which obviously was a monumental tragedy that leveled a vast portion of the city. But the analysis points out how the rebuilding effort turned the city into an architectural laboratory.
Yeah, it wasn't just a reconstruction.
Right, stricter building codes and this massive influx of capital led directly to the invention of the steel frame skyscraper. They didn't just rebuild, they engineered a permanent heavyweight density that dictates the city's economy to this day.
And that infrastructure legacy is exactly why the city functions the way it does now.
Yeah.
It created a level of urban density that you simply cannot replicate from scratch
They
today.
just couldn't afford it.
No, you couldn't afford the land or the materials to build a second Chicago. Which actually leads us to the housing data and the core of that asymmetric value proposition we mentioned.
Oh man, the housing data. Looking at the July 2026 Zillow data in our source file, there's a serious disconnect here. The typical home value in Chicago is roughly $338,000.
Yeah.
I mean, how is that possible for a global hub? If you are listening to this right now from a coastal city and you're paying premium rent, this next data point is going to frustrate you.
Let's contextualize it to show exactly how stark the contrast is.
A typical home in San Francisco right now is $1.29 million,
Wow.
and New York is sitting around $832,000. Even looking at rentals in Chicago, which the report notes are actually up 6% year over year to an average of $2,395, it is still well below those coastal global cities.
Yeah, the analysis breaks down the practical gross income ranges. You can live comfortably alone in a typical apartment in a highly desirable neighborhood on an $80,000 to $110,000 salary.
Try maintaining that standard of living in Manhattan or the Bay Area on that income.
You really can't. I mean, you are getting access to a true global city labor market, elite financial infrastructure, world-class museums, heavy rail mass transit, all of it, at a Midwestern housing valuation.
But here's where it gets really interesting. Because if the amenities are world-class and the houses are this cheap, what is the hidden cost? We know there is always a hidden cost.
What's fascinating here is how the cost structure is shifted. The hidden cost is entirely operational.
Okay, what does that mean?
It's in the ongoing friction of living and doing business there. You aren't paying $1 million for the property up front, but you're absorbing a heavy local tax burden month after month.
Walk us through the mechanics of those numbers, because they add up quickly.
They do. First, Illinois has a 4.95% flat state income tax. Then the combined general sales tax inside the Chicago city limits is 10.25%.
Right.
But the real mechanism you have to understand is the property tax system. Cook County relies on overlapping taxing districts. So as a homeowner or a commercial landlord, you aren't just paying a single unified city property tax.
Right, you're paying a levy for the school district, the park district, the water reclamation district, the library system. They all stack up independently.
Exactly. So the effective property tax rate becomes quite heavy. Your mortgage principal might be low, but your monthly escrow for taxes is going to be significant.
And we can't ignore the physical environment either. The report specifically notes the winter climate drives up operational overhead. You have to aggressively heat those homes, maintain the public infrastructure through relentless freeze-thaw cycles, which just destroy asphalt and, you know, fund municipal snow removal.
It all hits the bottom line for both the individual household and the city budget.
Precisely. The barrier to entry buying the home or signing the commercial lease is much lower, but the friction of staying there is higher.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
So once you wrap your head around that unique cost-to-benefit ratio, you have to look at the macro engine that actually supports those carrying costs. We are talking about a Cook County GDP of $546.4 billion.
Incredible scale.
And a broader regional Chicagoland economy hovering around $886 billion. I mean, you don't sustain an economy nearing $1 trillion just by shuffling papers.
No, you don't. It is the third largest metro economy in the United States. And the defining characteristic of that engine is extreme diversification.
The report frames this beautifully. It compares Chicago to other major hubs, like Houston is heavily anchored by the energy sector. San Francisco is almost entirely beholden to the tech industry. New York is hyper-concentrated in finance and media.
Right.
But Chicago's economy functions much more like a subwoofer in a complex sound system. You might not look at it as the flashy main speaker blasting the high notes, but it is providing the heavy foundational baseline that allows the rest of the American economy to play.
That is a highly accurate way to visualize it. When the tech sector contracts, manufacturing might be up. When logistics slow down, healthcare and higher education provide an economic floor. It absorbs shocks remarkably well.
And the specific industries driving this are fascinating. The report highlights the CME Group. That makes Chicago a global center for derivatives and risk management.
Let's define what that actually means in practice, because it sounds like jargon. A derivative in this context is essentially a financial contract. It's where the world's corporations go to buy insurance against unpredictable futures.
Right, like hedging against the future price of wheat, or swinging interest rates, or foreign currency volatility.
Exactly. Managing global economic risk is literally built into the city's DNA.
And alongside that financial layer, you have the physical logistics backbone. The analysis notes that six Class I railroads intersect there, which means the heavyweight cross-country freight lines that literally carry the physical economy all converge in one spot.
Yeah, if it moves across North America, it likely switches tracks in Chicago.
Add to that the cargo and passenger volume at O'Hare and Midway airports. And now the report highlights an emerging deep tech sector, specifically pointing to quantum computing and life sciences.
And, you know, that physical connectivity extends directly to the local workforce, too. The transit system is a major focal point in this 2026 analysis.
Right. The transit network is undergoing a significant evolution. The report details how the new federal transit funding from the NYDA Act in 2026 is driving an expansion of service. They are rolling out 24 frequent network CTA bus routes by the end of the year,
which is massive for urban mobility.
Combine that with the 24-hour red and blue rail lines, with the blue line running directly into O'Hare around the clock.
Think about the mechanism of that for a second. Very few American cities allow a resident to plausibly combine global air travel, regional commuter rail, rapid urban transit, and neighborhood walkability without ever needing to own a car.
It's rare.
It is. That lack of forced car ownership is an immense economic advantage for a young workforce.
So what does this all mean for someone listening right now who is looking to start a business or expand a company there today?
Well, the report terms the real advantage as depth per dollar. Think about the talent pipeline. You have elite institutions right there. The University of Chicago, Northwestern, the University of Illinois, Chicago, the Illinois Institute of Technology.
Yeah, a huge academic footprint.
Right. So a company can hire globally competitive engineers, quants, and executive managers without having to pay the hyperinflated salaries required to keep someone afloat in Silicon Valley.
So it's like you're tapping into the talent pool of a tier one coastal city at a tier two price point.
Exactly.
But you can't have an $886 billion regional economy with global logistics without a sprawling bureaucratic back end running the whole thing. And looking at the political power map in this 2026 report, it sounds like trying to navigate a ship where 50 different people have a hand on the steering wheel.
Yeah.
How does anything actually get built?
It requires an understanding of intensely layered government. If you want to develop a property or launch an enterprise, you cannot just go to the mayor's office and expect a green light.
Yeah.
You have to navigate overlapping jurisdictions.
Let's break down how those layers actually function. You have Mayor Brandon Johnson and a 50-member city council. They are handling your municipal services, zoning approvals, and local ordinances.
Right.
But then operating right on top of them, you have Cook County, led by Board President Tony Preckwinkle. The county controls the property tax assessment system we talked about earlier, and they run an extensive public health apparatus.
And it doesn't stop there.
Right. Above both of them, you have the state of Illinois and Governor J.B. Pritzker. The state controls the transit funding mechanisms, the laws governing public pensions, and the broader legal framework the city operates within.
And that fragmentation is becoming even more pronounced. The analysis highlights a perfect structural example of this. The transition happening right now with the Chicago Public Schools. In 2026, the district is operating under a 21-member hybrid board. But by January 2027, it transitions to a fully elected board.
Why does that specific shift matter so much to the broader economy?
Because it removes a foundational pillar of direct mayoral control. Historically, the mayor appointed the school board, which meant the mayor controlled a multi-billion-dollar education budget and thousands of jobs. Making that board fully elected fractures that centralized power.
Which perfectly frames the 2026 budget clash, which the report points to as a defining moment. Mm-hmm. They had a $16.6 billion municipal budget process that was unusually contentious.
Very much so.
The city council actually rejected major parts of the mayor's proposal and advanced its own package. It was a highly visible conflict between the executive and legislative branches over taxes, borrowing, and business levies.
Yeah.
And I should note, regardless of the politics of the budget itself, the mechanics of that fight are telling.
Oh, absolutely. If we connect this to the bigger picture, it proves that the old Daley era machine, that top-down, absolute command and control system where the mayor's word was final, is entirely gone. But the report makes a crucial distinction. Chicago is post-machine, but is not post-organization.
Wait, explain that distinction. What does a post-machine city look like in practice for a business?
It means we are looking at a pluralistic power system. Labor unions, the building trades, commercial real estate interests, progressive neighborhood coalitions, and individual local aldermen. All have highly independent power bases now.
So power is scattered.
Right. For an investor, a mayoral endorsement is certainly valuable, but it is no longer sufficient. You have to build a multi-node coalition. Mm. You have to know how to convene disparate stakeholders who don't necessarily answer to the same boss.
And looming over all of this political maneuvering is what the report explicitly calls the city's most persistent structural vulnerability, unfunded pension liabilities.
That is the ultimate structural constraint. The city has recently improved its funding discipline, but those legacy pension obligations operate as a massive, immovable, fixed cost.
How does that actually eat into the day-to-day operations of the city?
Well, because every dollar committed to a legacy pension debt is a dollar that cannot be spent on capital improvements, transit expansion, or municipal services. They constantly compete. Every single budget debate, like the $16.6 billion clash we just discussed, is essentially a negotiation around that immovable financial object.
It seems like that fractured political landscape perfectly mirrors the geographic and social fragmentation of the city itself. When you look at the demographic split in the report, the numbers are roughly divided into thirds, about 32% white, 30% Hispanic, and 28% black, alongside a growing Asian population at around 7%.
Yeah, but the report makes clear, those populations aren't smoothly blended across the map.
Not at all.
The demographics are deeply compartmentalized into distinct micro-markets. The analysis repeatedly emphasizes that looking at a Chicago average for almost any metric is highly misleading.
Looking at a citywide average in Chicago is like putting your head in the oven and your feet in the freezer and concluding that, on average, you feel perfectly comfortable.
That is a brutally accurate analogy for how this data functions.
You have these overlapping class systems operating completely independently, yet side by side. You have the global financial elite clustered in the West Loop and the Gold Coast. Then you have historically black, deeply rooted middle class and working class anchors like Bronzeville and South Shore.
Right.
You have extensive immigrant commercial ecosystems thriving in Chinatown and Pilsen. And those different geographies experience completely divergent realities, especially when it comes to public safety.
Public safety provides the starkest example of this fragmentation. The report details a material improvement in 2025. Murders fell roughly 29% to around 416 for the year. And there were sharp, measurable declines in robbery and vehicle theft as well.
Which is significant progress.
It is, but that statistical improvement does not erase the historical geographic disparity.
Right, because if you live in Lincoln Park or Lakeview up on the northern lakefront, your violent crime exposure is statistically quite low. You might deal with property crime or nightlife-related theft, but your daily experience is a generally safe, affluent, urban environment.
Exactly.
But then you have specific police districts on the west and south sides where systemic violence remains tragically concentrated. So how does a listener realistically navigate these extremes? If you're moving there or deploying capital there, how do you process that disparity?
The report insists that anyone engaging with the city must rely on block-by-block underwriting. You simply cannot use a citywide crime rate or a citywide economic growth rate to make a personal or business decision.
It's too broad.
Way too broad. A quantitative trader living in a luxury high-rise in Fulton Market and a family navigating school choices in South Shore are, for all practical purposes, navigating two completely different cities. You have to evaluate the specific transit nodes, the nighttime land use, the local school quality, and the immediate block-level safety data for your exact location.
It demands a high level of active engagement. You can't just put your urban experience on autopilot.
Exactly. You have to actively monetize the city's strengths, the extensive transit, the high wages, the global amenities, while being very deliberate and localized about managing the neighborhood-specific risks. And that requirement for active engagement is exactly what will define the city's trajectory over the next decade.
Let's synthesize all of this then and look forward. We've got the cheap housing barrier, but the high operational friction. We've got the sprawling, highly diversified economic engine, the pluralistic political landscape, and the deep block-by-block disparities.
A lot to weigh.
It really is. The 5 to 10 year forecast in the source material is really compelling, though. The base case for Chicago is not a sudden explosive boom, and it's certainly not a structural collapse. The specific phrase the analysts use is selective reinvention.
Selective reinvention, meaning the city has to actively outpace its legacy liabilities, specifically those pension debts, by fully leaning into its legacy assets, the transit infrastructure, the tier one universities, the logistics hubs.
And one of the most critical arenas for that reinvention is downtown. The Loop office market is clearly still in distress from the systemic shift toward hybrid work.
Oh, massive distress.
But rather than treating that purely as a terminal loss, the report points to a massive opportunity for adaptive reuse. They are looking at converting those deep floor plate commercial office buildings into residential and experience-oriented spaces.
It is an undeniably painful repricing process for commercial real estate owners. Valuations are taking a severe hit, but structurally, it is fundamentally necessary to create a more resilient 24/7 downtown ecosystem that doesn't just empty out at 5:00 p.m.
Which leads us to the ultimate takeaway. You have a city that is too foundational to the national economy to ever fail, but too complex to simply coast on its past successes. It has to actively manage its own reinvention.
And this raises an important question for you to consider as we wrap up this analysis. We know that the downtown commercial office market is in deep distress, and we know that it's causing significant property tax headaches and financial strain for the municipal government.
Yeah.
But what if this distress is actually Chicago's secret weapon for the next decade?
Oh, that's a fascinating twist. Walk me through the mechanics of that. How does empty office space become a weapon?
Well, think about the emerging industries the report highlighted earlier. Deep tech, quantum computing, advanced life sciences. These are incredibly capital-intensive fields. They require vast amounts of power, sophisticated cooling systems, and extensive physical lab space. If the massive empty commercial spaces in the loop are forced to reprice drastically, if the bottom truly falls out of the commercial rent, could that specific real estate crisis be the exact catalyst that makes Chicago the ultimate sandbox for these startups?
Wait, you're saying the crash in old economy office prices creates the perfect environment for new economy hardware?
Precisely. It could provide these capital-intensive startups with cheap, highly connected urban lab space sitting directly on top of a global fiber optic and mass transit network.
Wow.
That kind of centralized, discounted real estate simply doesn't exist in San Francisco or New York. The financial crisis of the old economy could literally, physically, house the foundation of the new one.
That is a brilliant way to frame it. It goes right back to the beginning of our deep dive. You look at the simple stock chart, you see the commercial real estate line going down, and the national narrative tells you the city is dying. But when you look closer, when you understand the mechanisms and see the city as a complex living organism, you realize that old tissue might just be making room for a new kind of growth. The heartbeat is still there, and the bones are made of steel. Thanks for joining us on this exploration of the Midwest Command Center. Until next time, keep looking past the headlines.